Shukadeva Goswami is concluding the chapter. On the discussion of the Lord in the heart, by explaining to Maharaj Parikshit, and I've just given you the answer to your first question, what should people in general do? What's their duty in life? To be fixed upon the Supreme Lord and go back to Godhead, and he's outlined the yoga process preceded by Virat Rupa meditation. If you can recall, Prabhupada explained that there are three ways one can get to Brahmaloka: pious activities, meditation on the Virat Rupa or Hiranyagarbha, or by the yoga system. And from that position one can go further if one is purified sufficiently and becomes fixed upon the goal of the personality Godhead, then he can go further. But that's the one of the indirect methods, and the devotional process is direct, and the devotional process is preferred. So now in text 33, Shukadeva Goswami says, for those who are wandering in the material universe, there is no more auspicious means of deliverance than what is aimed at in the direct devotional service of Lord Krishna. So that's a conclusion. If you look at the earlier parts of the discussion, it may seem that all of this over here is the answer, but now he's saying definitively, this is the best. Now, a little Bhagavad Gita quiz. Where in Bhagavad Gita is this same understanding confirmed? There are a number of verses. Prabhupada quotes several of them. Some verses in Bhagavad Gita, please, where Krishna confirms, for those who are wandering in the material universe, there is no more auspicious means of deliverance than what is aimed at in the direct devotional service of Lord Krishna. Which, in English translation?
The destination that means through all the processes such as studying of the Vedas, performance of sacrifices, and so on, whatever is achieved by through all these processes is surpassed by the process of devotional service.
Okay. Very good. There's many more. Yes. Translation. Amongst all the systems of yoga. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So that's the comparison of the yoga system. The best of all yoga systems is the yoga, the system of devotion. What else? Two down and about six more to go. What about when Krishna compares the system of knowledge to the system of devotion? One who follows the path of knowledge after many, many births and deaths, may come to the right conclusion. And that right conclusion is... Okay. And the translation? After many, many lives, births and deaths, Yanavan Mam Prapadyate. Such a person surrenders unto me because he's understood what? Vasudeva is everything. And such a great soul is rare. Amongst all yogi, amongst all jnanis, the best is the one who understands that Krishna is everything. And then he surrenders to Krishna. Amongst all yogis, the one that's the best is the one that abides in great faith serving him. Amongst all the other processes that are auspicious and elevating, they're surpassed and already included within the process, they're surpassed by, and included, the benefits are included within the process of devotion. That's sufficient, but there's more. Think about the conclusion that Krishna makes in the whole of Bhagavad Gita. Parjanya Maharaj, what's the concluding statement that Krishna makes in Bhagavad Gita? His last instruction. Everybody knows this verse. Sarva Dharmam. Can you recite? Nervous? Okay. You just know the right button. I don't know the right button. Translation. Okay, so many other dharmas, while they're good, they should be understood to be in a secondary position to the essence of the whole instruction of Bhagavad Gita, surrender unto Krishna. And when one does that, those things are accomplished. Any others? There are others. Give a hint. You're going to ask me this question. Krishna is asked by Arjuna, which do you consider is better? Meditation upon the personal form or the impersonal feature of you? Which does Krishna consider better? Okay. And why does he say so? But specifically from Bhagavad Gita, he says, both will give you the right conclusion, but this other path is inferior because... It's very difficult to fix your mind upon the formless for those who are embodied. And it's indirect. Even if one can accomplish that, it doesn't reach the conclusion. Still, one has to come to the position, this is what you were going to say, that one has to come to the position of surrender. So that's another of the sarva dharmams that one is supposed to parityajya, abandon. Okay. Thank you. You knew the answers all along. You're just testing me to see if I can draw it out of you. Okay. Now there's a similar idea expressed in the first canto of this same Srimad Bhagavatam. What is that verse? I'll coax it out of you. The sages of Naimisharanya ask, what is the essence of all the teachings within all the Vedas? Can you explain that in a succinct fashion? What is that? What is the answer? A little bit louder, please. Well, it's the first, it's 6 and 7 from chapter 2. Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojata Janayati Ashu Vairagyam Gyanam Chayada Haitakam. And? That verse also works, but because that's part of the series of verses that answers that question. But the culmination of the teaching of all the Vedas, rather than the parts or partial understandings of the Vedas, is devotional service. The next verse, which is also very straightforward, he just says the same thing in a different way. He says that Lord Brahma, the first created living being, he heard this knowledge of the Vedas imparted within the heart from the Supreme Lord. He studied it three times, Prabhupada explains, as is the tradition within the Vedic system. Brahma started that tradition, and he reached the same conclusion. What is that? Attraction for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is the highest perfection of all religion. So, whether it's meditation on Virat Rupa, or whether it's the yoga system, or whether it's the knowledge system, or whether it's the dhyan system, or whatever the system, its culmination is in devotion to the Personality of Godhead. Okay, we just covered two verses. Now, we could speak great length on those two verses because they're essence understandings. I don't want to try to finish the chapter. And this next verse is something of an illustration of the Bahunam Janmanam Ante Gyanavan Mam Prapadyate verse. Only we're going to do it in about a half an hour instead of Bahu Janmas. It's by taking help from the intelligence to understand the existence of the soul and the existence of the supersoul, and to take shelter in devotion and service unto the supersoul. Are you ready? Well, it's many lifetimes in a half an hour, so you've got to be very attentive. And it's very, very systematic. Prabhupada begins, read the verse. The Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, is in every living being along with the individual soul, and this fact is perceived and hypothesized in our acts of seeing and taking help from the intelligence. Purport. Prabhupada says, one of the common arguments that people give is, I can't see God, so how do I know that He exists? The empiricist. How do I know that He exists? So then Prabhupada explains that if one takes help from the intelligence, if one sees through the eyes of even reason, or the combination of reason and scripture, then one can perceive, or through the acts of perception and through the act of taking help from the intelligence, one can understand conclusively the existence of the Supersoul. Okay, so there's 7 steps. Oh, note takers. First, step number 1 is, Prabhupada writes, one can perceive one's self-identification and feel positively that he exists. Like going back to Descartes, as I mentioned, I think, therefore I am. I think, therefore I am. I'm not sure that I exist, but when I think about it, I can experience my thinking about it. And by that experience of thinking, I can positively assert I exist. That's the first step. The next step comes from separating the thinking process from the thinker and the object that one thinks about from the thinker. That's step number 2. You're in samadhi over here? You got the first step? You positively exist? Are you convinced? If I pinch you, I won't do that, but if I pinched you, you would say, ouch! Something like that. Positively, you exist, right? But that sensation, that thing that you perceive, and the perceiver, the person who's perceiving being pinched, is different. What do you think? You like that? Okay, I won't pinch you, don't worry. Prabhupada writes, maybe not abruptly, but by using a little intelligence, he can feel that he is not the body. He can feel that his hand, leg, head, hair, and the limbs of his body are parts and parcels of the body, but as such, each of those limbs, head, hand, so forth, is not myself. Just by using intelligence, he can distinguish and separate his self from the things that he sees. I've done this in elementary schools. It is a nice thing if you have a group of young kids and they're kind of like really restless, like kids often are. Ask the group of kids, who is the smartest kid in the class? And they all giggle and they all look at the one person who's the smartest kid. They all know who the smartest kid in the class is. And sometimes they say, yeah, I'm the smartest kid in the class. Sometimes they're humble and say, no. But everybody knows who's the smartest kid in the class. Okay, so then you ask them to stand up. Whoa, they're going to show off how smart they are. Okay, now point to your hand. Point to your arm. Point to your head. Point to your knee. Point to your elbow. Now point to yourself. And many times they go like this. So who are you? And then you have everyone's attention, so they're now the point. You say, my hand, my head, my arm, my leg, my body, and then there's me. There's the object that's possessed and the possessor of the object, like my shirt, my glasses, my shoes. And then there's me. So we don't think we're the coverings, we're the person inside. So with a little help of intelligence, one can understand there's not first I exist, and then the I that exists is different than the body. Okay, now we're ready for lesson number 3. It's just an extension that I'm not this body, but then so many other things, whatever are the objects of perception. Can it not only physical objects, but sound, taste, smell, touch. That's different than, the object is different than the perceiver. The perceived is different than the perceiver. And that in order to, and that's still the second one. So the third one is that the act of perceiving is a dependent act. The act of walking is a dependent act. The act of hearing, the act of smelling is a dependent act. We don't do it independently. Prabhupada writes, all of our ordinary actions and perceptions depend on various forms of energy supplied to us by nature in various combinations. We have our 5 knowledge acquiring senses, 5 working senses, he lists them. And we also have mind, intelligence, and ego. We have all those things. They're supplied by various arrangements of gross or subtle forms of material nature. And it is equally evident that our objects of perception are nothing but the products of inexhaustible permutations and combinations of the forms taken by material nature. And thus, I, the perceiver of this body, or the possessor or occupant of this body, cannot move the body or cannot make the body do what the body does independently. A little thoughtfulness, you can come to that conclusion. Like Prabhupada's example is digesting your food. Okay, now I'm going to digest my food. It doesn't work like that. And sometimes if we have some illness, we are not able to function properly. Or by some accident, we lose our ability to move, to walk. So our ability to do things is dependent upon agency that's applied to us. That's the third step. We're not independent. The acts of perceiving, the acts of locomotion are dependent, not independent. I, the perceiver, am not independent. You ready for the next one? The perceiver is conscious, and the perceived matter or the facilities of material nature, they're inanimate or matter. Prabhupada writes, the spiritual quality of the seer is manifest in our dissatisfaction within the limited state of materially conditioned existence. Not only I'm different from this body, but there's a spiritual quality of myself that does not permit material things to make me feel satisfied. Vyasa came to that conclusion. He wrote the whole Vedas and was still feeling dissatisfied. The materialist acquires so many things and he's still dissatisfied. The sense gratifier brings so many objects to their senses and still not satisfied. They don't stop to think, what's the message here? But the one who is thoughtful, and this purport is inducing us, encouraging us to be thoughtful, there's a qualitative difference. Not only there's separate things, but one is spiritual and the other is not. It's not of the same quality. Okay? Next one. Now we come to the point that the things which are seen by little use of intelligence cannot be animate unless we accept someone as the user or director of the intelligence. This is more subtle. Intelligence gives one direction, like some higher authority, and a living being cannot see or move or eat or do anything without the help of a little intelligence. So we're distinct from matter. There's a spiritual quality to us that's distinct from the quality of matter. And to do the things that we do will require intelligence to do it. Now this is where some spiritualists get lost and think, I am that supreme. But at least there's a step that says, I require some higher intelligence. And it may be on the conscious level, like how to do some technical thing, or the unconscious level, like how to make sure that my heart keeps beating, or how to make sure that I keep breathing. I mean, although it's involuntary, there's some direction behind it. How to get up and walk. How does a child of any species of life, a newborn, know how to take nourishment from the mother? They don't go to school. They take milk from their mother. But they know how to do. How do they learn to fly? I had a very interesting experience. One evening I was in traveling Sankirtan, and I was with a group of devotees. They had a big bus, and there were about 20 brahmacharis in this bus party, and three vans. They would go out in different directions and come back to the bus at night. The bus was parked at a campsite. It was very pleasant. So by the campsite there was a nice stream, and it was springtime. No, it was fall time. So the fish were swimming upstream to spawn, to lay their eggs. And the birds were flying south to migrate because the cold weather was coming. And I had this, it was amazing. It's just simple, but in one sense it was amazing. Just this sudden overwhelming feeling that, how do they know to do these things? To swim upstream and to fly south. There's no school, no university, nobody, you know, sat them down and said, okay guys, let's go. They just do it. There's an intelligence that's coming from the super soul that not only it tells the birds to fly south and the fish to swim upstream, but everything that's existing is receiving intelligence to do the things that they do. Prabhupada explains, even for the trees to grow towards the light of the sun. Those of you that have had plants in your home, you sometimes do this, I've done this. The plants grow towards the light, and you turn them around, and the plants, the leaves will then turn and reach toward the sunlight. So the scientific explanation is it's the photosynthetic process, blah, blah, blah. But there's some intelligence behind that photosynthetic process. How do the whatever it is that takes sunlight and turns it into chlorophyll, how does it work? Where's the intelligence behind this to do anything? To do anything, it requires some intelligence. Next step. that intelligence comes from the supreme intelligence that's situated side by side within the heart of every living being. Now that comes from scriptural reference. We'll go the other direction, before that one. There are persons that don't take help from intelligence. Prabhupada writes in the purport, they're deranged persons. So to do things properly requires intelligence. The absence of that intelligence is madness. So there is such a source that one can tap into or not tap into. So now here's the application of that understanding, and it leads to the final one. At this point in our investigation, we may consider the following question. On the one hand, we realize that all our perceptions and activities are conditioned by arrangements of material nature. On the other hand, we ordinarily say, I am perceiving. I am feeling. I am doing. So the actions that we perform and acts of perception that we're doing involuntarily, just even unconsciously all the time, there's this free will thing. Although we've taken help from an intelligence, we can understand that there is some higher intelligence beyond us to help make things happen. We can go into that position of surrender to Krishna, Bahunam Janmanamante, Gyanavan Mam Prapadjate, Vasudev Sarvamiti. We can go there. Krishna is everything. Or we can just go to the default mode. That was very interesting. Now business as usual. I am doing, I am perceiving, kartaham iti manyate. Therefore, we can say that in our material senses of perception and action, so there's five knowledge acquiring senses, five working senses, right? That's what it's referring to. The senses of perception and action are moving because we are identifying the self with the material body, and that the superior principle of super self is guiding and supplying us according to our desire. That's the normal situation of conditioned material life. By taking advantage of the guidance of super self in the form of intelligence, we can continue to study and put into practice our application of the conclusion, I am not this body. Or we can choose to remain in false material identification, fancying ourselves to be the possessors and the doers. There's a free will option there. Our freedom consists in orienting our desire either towards the ignorant material conception or the true spiritual conception. We can easily attain the true spiritual conception by recognizing the super self, Paramatma, to be our friend and guide, and by dovetailing our intelligence with the superior intelligence of Paramatma. Because this whole chapter is about meditation on Paramatma. Now it's taking help from the intelligence to be very, very convinced. The super self and the individual self are both spirit, and therefore the super self and the individual self are both qualitatively one and distinct from matter. But the super self and the individual self cannot be in the equal level, because the super self gives direction or supplies intelligence, and the individual self follows the direction, and thus actions are performed properly. Unless we're deranged because we're out of sync with super self. The individual is completely dependent upon the direction of the super self, because in every step the individual self follows the direction of the super self in the matter of seeing, hearing, thinking, feeling and willing. We're almost done. I hope you're not totally lost. This is an exercise of understanding that Vasudeva is everything, that jnanis may take many, many lifetimes to do. And ideally, if they follow the path of jnana properly, their modes of nature will become more refined in the quality of goodness, and their ability to discern, and not just theoretically understand, but practically accept. Just like Plato practically accepted the existence of the eternal soul. You know the famous part where Julius Caesar saw Plato as a big problem. And so, I think it was Julius Caesar, he wanted to get rid of him, but he knew if he got rid of him, then people would revolt against him. Was it Julius Caesar? Who knows the history? Whoever it was. So they told him that, you know, we've given you a trial and we found you guilty and now you have to drink poison. And we'll have to kill you. And his reply, before you kill me, you'll have to catch me. He was convinced that he was spirit soul. Okay, if you believe so strongly that you're a spirit soul, then you take this poison. So he took poison. With the understanding that you can kill the body but not the soul. He was so convinced. It wasn't just theoretical armchair philosophy. He had that realization. So he was fearless. This exercise is to also help strengthen the intelligence when it comes to understanding the Supreme, or understanding the Supersoul. Our process of devotion is to understand the Supersoul through the receptive mood of submissive service. We can experience Krishna. We can experience Krishna guiding things. As we say, Krishna's mercy. But one can experience that relationship with Krishna through the medium of service. Some people are not prepared to just surrender and experience Krishna through loving service. Their intelligence needs to be convinced. Or they need to, through this meditation process, they need to experience internally in a subtle way. So this is an exercise by taking help from intelligence to understand and be convinced of the presence of the Supersoul. So, concluding paragraph. As far as common sense is concerned, we come to the conclusion that there are three identities: matter, spirit, and Supersoul. Now, going to the Bhagavad Gita or Vedic literature, we can further understand that all three identities, matter, spirit, and Supersoul, are all dependent upon Krishna. Even the Supersoul, Prabhupada explains, is giving direction to matter, and in that way he becomes the order supplier of the living entity. But the Supreme is far more than that's all he is. He's a big clerk, and he gets requisition slips, and he takes care of all those requisition slips. And that's who God is and what God does. That's what Paramatma does, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead is far more than that. And his expansion as Paramatma does that. Mayadhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetunani konteya jagat viparivartate. That's the function of Supersoul. But the Supreme Self, Purushottama, the Absolute Personality of Godhead, is the complete feature of the Supreme. And he has his various pastimes and exchanges of love with his devotees, where it's not just the business of looking after and attending to the affairs of material creation. So here's the conclusion. The Bhagavad Gita is the preliminary conception of the Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, and Srimad Bhagavatam is the further explanation of the science of Godhead. So, if we stick to our determination and pray for the mercy of the Director of Intelligence, that's Krishna, sitting within the same bodily tree, like a bird sitting with another bird, certainly the purport of the revealed information of the Vedas becomes clear to our vision, and there is no difficulty in realizing the Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. Last sentence in the purport. The intelligent man, therefore, after many births of such use of intelligence, surrenders himself at the lotus feet of Vasudeva, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7.9. So, what's going on here, aside from the details of this seven-step method of understanding positively the existence of the soul, positively the distinction between the soul and matter, and the taking help from the intelligence of Supersoul that both matter and the individual soul depend upon, when one recognizes all of that, and then this final stage of recognizing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you surrender to him. Aham sarvasya prabhava matak sarvam pravartate iti madva bhajante mam buddha bhava samandita. All of this subject matter is through sound vibration to purify our consciousness and bring us to the point of surrender to Krishna. With no doubt, with no obstacle, with no other conception, with no other shelter, simply shelter in the Personality of Godhead. So now just to review these two chapters, Maharaj Parikshit has asked, what is the duty of all beings? The answer is to surrender to Krishna. And there may be many steps to come to that point of surrender to Krishna. And steps are fine. Take steps, but come to that position of surrender to Krishna. Initially, chapter one, there has to be some detachment from the gross affairs of material existence and some forming of an attachment of a conception of the Supreme. That's chapter one. Then chapter two, fixing the mind on the form of the Supreme who is situated within the heart and furthering detachment. Detachment starting with the gross things of day-to-day life and furthering the position of detachment based upon attachment to the spiritual form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Furthering one's attachment to the spiritual form of the Personality of Godhead. The process of dhyan assists us, but the process of dhyan is surpassed, or ultimately the strength that dhyan has to carry us to the ultimate position is through the medium of bhakti. Yoginam api sarvesham madgatein antaratmanam Shraddhavan Bhajateyo Mam. That's the culmination. So we need to know what our goal is so that we can get there. And so the goal at the conclusion of chapter 2, we're almost at the final two verses of chapter 2, surrender to Krishna. It's the statement given in Bhagavad Gita. After the whole of Bhagavad Gita, so many things, that's the conclusion. Bhagavatam teaches the same thing. It just expands the detailed knowledge and even stronger focus on the different aspects of Krishna. Universal form is also discussed in chapter 11 of Bhagavad Gita. Here we're getting in chapter, a whole chapter dedicated in the Srimad Bhagavatam to explaining another perspective on the universal form. The Dhyan Yoga process is also described. Here it's described in greater detail. Just the correlation between Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam is what I'm speaking about. There's not a different conclusion, it's the same conclusion. Just the detailed understanding of the poetry of the Bhagavatam is so beautiful. And it leaves one, if you carefully consider it and carefully apply it, you come to the right conclusion. Now there's this free will thing that we can take it as information and not apply it because we have some resistance to surrendering to Krishna, or we're just lazy and we're so conditioned by the material way of life. But spiritual life isn't for people who are lazy. It's for people who are very sharp and have very carefully considered this message. Sometimes the counter argument is given. Life of devotion is for people who are just kind of, you know, they can't get it together in the material world, so they take this up. Sentimental, da-da-da-da-da. But it's not for sentimental people. It's because there's so much opposition. To really go forward towards the goal of spiritual life, one has to be thoughtful. One has to have sharp, penetrating consideration of this message and surrender. It takes stronger intelligence to be a devotee than to not be a devotee. Be an aggressive materialist. It doesn't take so much intelligence. It just takes a lot of belligerence, but not a lot of intelligence. It takes great thoughtfulness. Prabhupada would teach like that. Munishinam. Spiritual life is for those who are thoughtful. They don't just let life pass them by. They consider what's happening. So this particular purport is very nice. It helps us to thoughtfully consider the existence of the personality of Godhead as the object or the person unto whom we should surrender. Okay, so any discussion. This might have been better in a morning class. People are more alert. That's the sequence it came in. Okay. Microphone.
Maharaj, up to the point where we came up to the point of higher intelligence. He recognizes the person using intelligence, he sees that there is higher intelligence which is guiding things.
Yeah.
Then we went to the super soul through scriptural reference. We took scriptural reference to identify that higher intelligence as the super soul.
Yeah.
Now what is the emphasis to trying to achieve this? Does it mean he will not be able to progress beyond that stage if he does not? Scriptural reference means he has to accept a spiritual master?
Even to do this properly, it takes guidance. Prabhupada explained once, when every living being is born, do they have an understanding of the soul? Most elementary thing of spiritual life. No understanding of the soul. Somewhere along the line, one receives some higher benedicting understanding of the soul exists. So even ABC requires some guidance. Now the others can be, the guidance can be just common sense up to the point of super soul. The other is also, it stands to reason. God is everything, so there's something more to God's existence than just directing the affairs of matter, like a traffic cop or something. He has a personal life, besides being a traffic cop. And what are those activities of his personal life? That's his higher nature, or his personal feature. But so even these other steps, there's some scriptural background. Now this goes back to this intelligent design argument. Some scientists say it's not a question of belief, it's a question of science. You see something that's organized, there's a design to it. Behind the design, there's some intelligence. Duh, as they say in America. But then the other argument says, that's just your belief. And it's belief because scriptural. Okay. Anything else? Yes.
Maharaj, my question is like, when a person comes new to Krishna consciousness.
When a person comes to Krishna consciousness.
New, so at that time, he hears and intelligently evaluates what is Krishna consciousness, whether what he's hearing is correct or not. All this he thinks in, through his intelligence.
I didn't catch it.
Well, I'm taking a case. Let's when a person comes new to Krishna consciousness, he hears and then he evaluates what is Krishna consciousness, what is he is hearing, how it is correct. We see that a one person, he properly evaluates what he is actually hearing. And he comes to proper understanding that this is correct. Whereas we see some people, they are not able to properly evaluate what is Krishna consciousness. So, although it is like what I understood is intelligence is given by super soul. So it is that they have some, one person who is coming to right conclusion is having right desire. And one who is not able to come to right conclusion, it is not that he is not in right desire, or what is it?
Let me say back what I suggest you get a better quality speaker. Everybody, this, you know, so many persons come forward to learn about Krishna consciousness. Some people grasp it properly, some people don't grasp it properly. Is this because they have some impure desire? Is that why they don't grasp it properly? That's your question?
Because the intelligence is given by super soul. So is it?
Is super soul filtering out the proper understanding for some and filtering in the understanding for others? That's what you're indicating?
Based on their desires.
Sure. Sure. You just want confirmation that that's how it works? You want a scriptural reference for that's how it works? Sarvashacham Riddhi Sannivishto Matak Smritir Gyanam Apohanam Cha. You know the verse? 15:15 Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is situated in the heart, and from him comes knowledge, from him comes remembrance, from him comes forgetfulness. So from knowledge is the opposite of knowledge, remembrance is opposite is forgetfulness. Supersoul is directing the wanderings of all living beings, those that are remembering and those that are forgetting. And he sees what is, there are two things, their desire and their deserve. I want to forget Krishna. Okay. Covered. I want to remember Krishna. Okay. Remove the covering. He's the filter changer. Supersoul. Function. So we're dependent upon Krishna to realize the teaching of Krishna consciousness. Some persons are like the idea of depending upon Krishna to understand Krishna. Those persons can understand Krishna. Some persons don't like. Prabhupada has explained it. They're the doer, the knower. Kartaham. Such a person cannot understand. Krishna puts over the filters. Krishna removes the filters. So he's the controller of his external energy. Under his direction, the external energy covers or discloses. We're dependent upon Krishna's control. He's independent, we're dependent. So that's, you know, that's what you're asking, and the answer is yes.
Yeah. Let's say I get a case, a person who has practiced for some time.
Person has practiced for some time.
So there is some sincerity.
Some sincerity.
But in the matter of execution, there will be desires which are coming out.
Some desires too.
So it is what I understand. What is my what I am understanding is those desires.
I lost you. Well, you went too fast. Did you catch it?
What I am understanding from this is that.
Okay.
The super soul even facilitate those desires?
He may or may not. He's not obliged. He's not under contract with you. You desire something, he's got to do it. He may or he may not. But he knows what those desires are. He also knows what your deserve is.
So if one is going on a wrong track, super soul will give some indications?
Oh yes. So many indications. Look out for the cliff. Krishna will warn you. Internally and externally. But we can choose to be belligerent. Most people do. Plenty of warnings. My voice going like that is the word cliff. C-L-I-F-F. You fall off a cliff. Cliff. Okay. Krishna gives warnings. Prompts from within and from out, without. Without is from scripture, by indications within nature, by other people. And from within, always. He's our best friend. He doesn't give up on us, even we're, you know, lazy and crazy. He doesn't give up on us. Yes.
Maharaj, can we say that these seven steps comes in the platform of an intellectual platform like that? Can we say that these seven steps comes on the intellectual platform, understanding in this way? Is it like intellectual platform or like that? And if it is so, then
how that transformation of intellectual to spiritual or devotional platform, how does that take place?
How do you go from this platform to the devotional platform?
Yes, Maharaj. If these seven
the conclusion is, Krishna has done all of this, I surrender to Him. And actually, a little secret about this purport is it's building a relationship with Super Soul. Because it's all about, by taking help from the intelligence, one can understand this and one can understand that. But where's that intelligence coming from? It's coming from Super Soul. We just got tricked. Transcendental trick. To bring us closer to Super Soul. But if one has properly taken help from intelligence, then one surrenders. That's the demonstration or proof that one has done so. The proof is in our surrender. You okay? You're getting restless, huh? We're almost done. Anything else? Okay. You sure? Oh, I have something in my lap here. I'm sorry. Go for it. You have the microphone.
The process of devotional service requires that we have to surrender and submit the. Whereas the other process, there is speculative process.
The other process is what?
There he makes use of his own strength to try to understand things.
Based upon higher understandings.
Yes.
Not just upon surrender.
Yes.
It's more soothing to the ego.
Now in the process of devotional service, like we try to be dependent on the Supreme Lord for all things. But there are two things. One is, if we have a material conception, we try to depend for a different purpose, that is for fulfilling our desires. And second is, there is a spiritual motivation for depending on Krishna. Because even for a spiritual goal also I have to depend.
I have a hard time. Do it without the microphone. Yeah, we're depending upon Krishna for everything. For Krishna's mercy.
Now, there are two things. One is impure state of consciousness.
One is the which kind of consciousness?
In our impure consciousness.
Impure consciousness.
We have a mixed sort of desire.
We have mixed desire.
So, we are depending on Krishna for fulfillment of material desires, and when we have that consciousness, so the question is, the cultivation of qualities, we have said we are depending on Krishna for pure motivation, not for anything else.
Okay.
So,
how do we do what?
We don't depend on the Lord for our fulfillment of material desires.
You can do that too. That's not the higher platform, but one can do that too. I'm not sure what you're asking. That's depending upon Krishna. So many people go to Krishna with so many slips in their hand. He doesn't say go away. But that's not the platform of love. We're being trained in the platform of love to come to the higher desire, the position of purity. I'm not sure what you're asking.
Become a parasite, a sort of dependence for our material things also. pure motivation.
That's much better.
This is the dependence on Krishna is through the dependence on devotees of Krishna.
I like all the things that you're saying, I just don't understand what your question is.
Question is, how do we not depend on Krishna for an impure motivation?
You have to become free from material motivation. But that doesn't happen just by wishing it to happen. It requires the purification of devotional service itself. And gradually, that becomes washed away or cleansed. And the training, while that's happening, the training that you're very clearly expressing, you're receiving, is to awaken and strengthen that higher aspiration. The higher aspiration for purity, for not going to Krishna for things. And what happens when that happens, when that consciousness awakens? Krishna takes care of our things. Our hankering subsides, and at the same time, Krishna takes care of those things. Because he's taking care of those things anyways. Just listening to Prabhupada say that for the materialist, how many chapatis can they eat? They've got their quota, 4 chapatis, whatever it is. So they're thinking economic development. And the pious fruitive worker is thinking, I'll go to God and pray to him for my 4 chapatis. And the devotee is thinking, I don't have to ask God for my 4 chapatis. He'll make that arrangement. I don't have to think about it. I have to think about serving him. And that's our life in devotion. And the 4 chapatis come. Or whatever it is that we require. It's just a higher motivation and higher consciousness. Now go the other direction. Supposing somebody doesn't have that training, or they have the opportunity for training, but they don't have that higher consciousness. Sarvakama. Tivrena bhakti yogena. Follow? Like Dhruva Maharaj. I want a kingdom. I want a big time kingdom. I want a kingdom. Sarvakama. Tibrena bhakti yogena. And he got on the other side of desire for the kingdom. Not just on his own effort, but on the mercy of Narada. And he knew it. So, you're getting the training following the line of Rupa Goswami, Anyavi Lashatu Shunyam, Jnana Karmadya Navratam. That's the training you're getting, because that's the higher, right off, right away. Training. It's mercy. But does that mean that someone doesn't get that training, like Dhruva? He was advised by his mother and by Narada, give up this motivation, get back mentality, give it up. He didn't give it up. Even from the lower Sarvakama position, he got on the other side of the desire. So there's a low road and a high road. You follow what I'm saying? So you just take shelter of the training that you're getting. The instructions, the instructor, the message of pure devotion, take shelter there. You're being specifically trained to be able to get on the other side of your material desires just by the strength of that spiritual understanding and the spiritual force of the purity of that message. That can carry you to the other side. It works. You see it around you working. Those that take it very seriously. Okay? But it's not that, you know, Dhruva Maharaj didn't make it. He wasn't prepared to go the high road. Am I addressing your question? If I hope I understood your question. Okay. There's two written ones. You said Acharya Upasana and Krishna Ekasharana only can protect from material perplexity while in this path, on this path, endeavoring to practice instruction of Guru, undesirably dryness of heart appears and so-called devotion activity becomes mechanical. Kindly tell the reason and how to overcome it. The reason is for so many lifetimes, years and years and years and lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes, we've been turning our attention away from Krishna, and now we're trying to turn our attention toward Krishna, and our hearts are hard from that such long period of misuse of our free will. That's why. And what to do? Be patient and continue faithfully turning your attention to Krishna. Bless you. Stay in the association of devotees that have faith and soft hearts, and faith will grow in your heart and your heart will soften. Canto 1, Chapter 15. The Pandavas retire timely. Text 41. This is very specific. While executing our occupational duty, sadhana, and services, I understand that the feelings of insignificance are very important in transforming the heart. Please give some ways for practicing these feelings, cultivating these feelings. Well, I'll respond by giving an answer that Prabhupada gave. I heard this happened in New York, but Prabhupada gave the same answer also in Los Angeles to the temple president of New York and the temple president of Los Angeles. The narration that I've heard many times is in the morning Prabhupada would go for morning walks. And one time he was going for a morning walk right in Manhattan in the Lower East Side. And even the Lower East Side, there's big, tall buildings, and they were walking along. And the temple president, Brahmananda, big body and powerful devotee and very much respected leader within Krishna consciousness, said, Prabhupada, I have so much service and I'm given so much respect by the devotees, it's very hard to not become proud. How can I feel myself humble and insignificant? Prabhupada put his cane in the sidewalk and said, he started in the spiritual world. In the vastness of the spiritual sky, there is one planet named Krishna Loka. And in that Krishna Loka, there's countless living entities who are engaged in unlimited varieties of loving relationships with Krishna. That Krishna Loka planet is situated in the spiritual sky where there's innumerable Vaikuntha planets, and in one portion of that vast spiritual sky, there's the Mahatattva. And in that Mahatattva, there's Mahavishnu, expansion of Krishna, who resides there in the milk ocean, the causal ocean, and from him, from his the pores of his body, countless universes are streaming out as he exhales. And in those universes, one of the smallest of the universes is this universe in which we're situated, where there's the predominating personality, Lord Brahma, who has four heads. And in that vast, although smallest amongst all of the universes, vast universe, there's so many planets. And amongst those so many planets, there's one in this solar system called the Earth planet. And on that Earth planet, there are seven continents. And amongst the seven continents, there's this continent of North America. And in North America, there's one country called the United States. In the United States, there's one state called New York State. And in New York State, there's one city called New York City. And there's so many millions of persons living in New York City. And so many streets in New York City. And here we are standing on one of those streets, and you're asking me how you can think of yourself as insignificant. Think who is Krishna, and you can understand you're insignificant. And to be covered by the misconception of how significant I am is such an embarrassment for the soul. And we're wearing it in the form of this material body. It's simply an embarrassment of the soul. We're 1/10,000th the size of the tip of a hair in size, and we're thinking ourselves so significant. We're totally dependent, materially and spiritually, and we're thinking we're so significant. It's the paradise of a fool. And when we're in the company of Krishna through the medium of devotional service, it becomes very easy to not only understand but to feel our insignificance. If we execute our devotional service very sincerely, then realization of our insignificance becomes very natural and very easy. So I'm going to end there. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.